If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door. And hello, everybody. Welcome to a Sunday night edition covering Saturday night's main event. But all of us know what the real main event on Saturday was. Is that not true, Way?
Yeah, I would say so. The ball cap is on. Wow, look at this.
I'm not jumping off any bandwagon, Way.
No, this is the time to jump on, okay?
Oh, I'm on board. I kept my seat, okay? I've held on to my seat. It's a little sparse back here in the last row of the bandwagon. People are starting to me and Eugene Levy are we're handcuffed to our seats. We're not leaving.
Yeah. That's a nice hat. How long have you had that?
4 hours.
You just bought it?
I bought it today.
Really? Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. So you actually went out and bought a hat today.
They drew money out of John Pollock today. I felt I was so
sympathy.
I was so overjoyed by what they gave me over this last month that they got $50 out of me for this hat today.
Wow. It looks good on you. Like the trucker cap looks good on you. I like it.
Okay.
It does.
Is my lighting okay?
It's a bit dark.
It is a bit dark, isn't it?
Not sure why.
I'm going to adjust it because it's driving me a little nuts, okay?
I'm just
going to pump up my light.
I appreciate that.
You just tell me about your Sunday.
People have already waited, you know, like 24 hours for this review. So what's another, you know, 2 minute or two, of course. But yeah, we're here on a Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern time, live on youtube.com/postwrestling. Rather than the usual Saturday evening, of course, because, well, unless you've, I don't know, been in a coma for like the past 2 weeks, we've been pretty swept up in this whole, you know, Blue Jays World Series run. And of course, last night was the culmination, Game 7.
Yes, we are not quite 24 hours removed from the end of Game 7. If people are expecting me to come on here and be like crying, I'm just not. I was in such a great mood it was heartbreaking. It was a really heartbreaking loss. But my God, I was so entertained by this game. Like, it was so dramatic. And yeah, we came out on the other side of things. But I will take losing that way versus had we been like swept or just lost like 8-2 in Game 7. I mean, we went into extra innings. We had a commanding lead throughout most of the game. You know, it's just some calls went our way. Some calls did not go our way. And they so overperformed in this World Series. Anyone that was picking the Blue Jays before Game 1 to win was doing so with their heart and not their head, because nobody thought that this was going to be a competitive team for the LA Dodgers, and we took them to the brink as far as you could, and we lost to a better team. I can fully admit that at the end of it. But goddamn, it was close, and I had so much enjoyment over this last month of watching baseball that I'm genuinely going to miss baseball in my life for the next little while. Like, I'm actually excited about next season when it starts.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to kind of describe the hysteria around this. So, you know, Friday was Game 6. A lot of us thought that might have been a chance to clinch it too. So
Not me. I did.
You thought
forecast that we were going to lose Game 6, but not. I thought we would win in 7.
You were making plans to go out after the win on Saturday night.
I was legitimately in planning my route on my bike last night of where I was going to go, because I was going to go to Nathan Phillips Square last night after the game. And my wife was like, "You're going to go out?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm going to go out. This is like the only time this is going to happen for me in my lifetime." Yeah. And by 12:30, I told her I'm not going out any longer. I definitely got over my skis on Saturday, because I was like, we can't lose this game. I just thought we had this, and dude, Max Muncy and Miguel Rojas. I mean, they Rojas especially. That was a killer, but Max Muncy was just.
Well, don't forget Will Smith.
Will Smith was the real bad one. You're right, because that was the go-ahead run.
And of course, Yamamoto. You know, the name that I think will stick with
when
us.
When I saw that man warming up, not just in the bullpen, when he's doing his phantom throws in the dugout, chills go down my spine. That, to me, he was the scariest player on that Dodgers team this series. It was not Shohei Ohtani. It was not Max Muncy. It was definitely not Mookie Betts.
He's the Kendrick Lamar of 2025 to a Torontonian.
I saw this video of how he warms up. This guy's basically a contortionist that masquerades as a pitcher. What he does to prepare is insane.
Like, he does judo warm-ups.
He does judo warm-ups. He does stuff like...
Javelin.
He does javelin. He does like this contortionist deal with like his body, like how flexible this guy is. It's incredible.
Every pitcher will be doing this. Trust me, okay?
I don't think many pitchers could
do this. A lot of pitchers will be throwing javelin.
If Clayton Kershaw tried his warm-up, the man would be in a wheelchair by the end of that workout, guaranteed. Anyway. He was the difference maker in this series. He got 3 wins in this World Series.
3 out of the 4 wins.
That is insane. He pitched on back-to-back. He does, he did 7 innings in Game 6, and then he comes back in relief in Game 7. I mean, to me, he was... I've got to say, Ohtani had the unbelievable third game, but I thought he had like a much more subdued presence outside of that one incredible, incredible game that he had.
Which I think like makes for, to me, a more acceptable loss. Like if it was Ohtani getting that like final home run or something, I think I'd feel a lot shittier about it because it's just sort of the expected thing. You know, at that point, it'd just be like, oh, of course, you know. But the fact that like the rest of the team won, including like... Miguel Rojas, who like was not even in the starting lineup at all.
Oh,
like, that just kind of made me feel better for them. Like this truly was a team effort, you know, and you can't really feel bad about it anyway. So today, by the way, if you're here for the Saturday night's main event review, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer, everybody. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. Or if you're listening to this in archive, check the timestamp, skip right to it, we'll see you guys later. Okay. But like, taking things back to Friday, you know, I went trick-or-treating with my son, and it's just like, go Jays, you know, like most of the doors that I was knocking on to,
I would
everybody.
Say 80% of the doors, we went to one, they weren't even handing out candy, they handed out baseball cards, and like they put packs of cards together that they were giving out to the kids. I mean, that was
amazing. Nobody knocked on our door past 8 o'clock. It was over. Like Halloween was over in the whole city, like by that time. And so... Obviously, very disappointing way to even lose that game. But it just goes to show you like that was the spirit of the entire city. It felt like every single person here was watching this game and really, really hinging on the result of it. So whenever it happened on Saturday, when they actually did lose, I mean, shit, the life out of this city was sucked out. It was just like, and I was afraid, like, you know, if they lost, that something bad would happen. Like, people would be rioting. It was not that. It was a wave of depression and silence. And I'm sure instead of a potential riot, you just got a lot of people sulking on their way home. It was, I've never really felt something like that, honestly.
Yeah, I'd have a different mood if I was at the stadium and if I was in that sea of people leaving. Like, I can only imagine what it was. But, like, when the game ended, it was like, that sucked. I can't believe we lost. And my wife's trying to ask, like, how did that happen? How did that happen? And I'm explaining how
it happened. It's sports, dude.
Yeah, I was like,
two of the best teams are facing each other down to the last, like, you can't get deeper into this than extra innings in game 7.
This is going to be one of the more remembered World Series. Like, you got one classic game out of game 3, and then you got a second classic game out of it in game 7. Like, you are not going to have a greater stakes than that for a game 7, and I can only imagine what the... Can you imagine what the viewership in Canada alone is going to be when that comes out for, like... It was insane. We were talking like 7 million or so that were watching the earlier games of the World Series. Like, this is going to be an astronomical number that they do for Game 7 when that comes out. And the U.S., I mean, granted, you're coming off the Dodgers-Yankees last year, but all the fear was that, man, a Canadian market is going to tank in the U.S., and they've done, when you combine the audiences in Japan, the U.S. and Canada, you were talking like 30 million viewers watching this World Series before the weekend, before the deciding games.
No, incredible. Absolutely. So, like, when they lost, I mean, yeah, like, it fucking sucked. But, like,
also, I wasn't that down, to be quite honest. Like, I was disappointed. But afterward, I was just like, man, I have enjoyed this so much that I didn't even take it as some horrible outcome either, because it was so goddamn entertaining.
Well, for me, I feel like the wrestling fan in me kind of took over in that I can, like, obviously wins and losses matter to some extent, but ultimately what matters even more as a wrestling fan is whether or not the match was good, whether or not the card was good, whether or not the build was good. And this build was fantastic. Like, this match was fantastic. So by the end of it, I mean, you know, I'm on Cage Match trying to rate this entire series, I'd probably give it a 10. You know, like, if I'm giving it star ratings, it's a 7-star type of series, of course.
So now, I'll hedge that a little, satisfied. Okay? If Joe Carter grounds out in 1993, I mean, there is something to say for winning at the end of it. That does put things over. And when Vladdy hit that one rocket launcher to the outfield, like right into center field, that gasp from that crowd was one of the loudest sounds I have ever heard for a sporting event.
So obviously the Joe Carter thing is, I mean, they replayed the shit out of that because that's just like,
it's all the expectation. We've got.
Okay. Well, it's the expectation. And it almost like it's a gift and a curse, because you're pressuring every single Jay who goes up to bat to have that moment. And I ultimately feel like that probably worked against us. Everybody was looking for their Joe Carter moment.
Can we break down the hit where we have Páez and Kike Hernandez out in left and center? They're going for this ball. It was Clement that hit this one, wasn't it? I think it was. I'm pretty sure it was Clement. This ball drops. We win. Okay. Yeah. That's how crucial this hit is. And it's going, and they're both running for it. And you just see, like, Páez is just like, he just tackles this dude as he catches the ball. Yeah. And Hernandez goes down face first. And at first I'm thinking, oh my God, he just like charged into this guy and he's dead. And I'm watching it closer through the replays. This guy is face down because I think he believes that me and this moron just cost our team the World Series. Mm-hmm. He's thinking this ball just fell because when he gets up, he's just been railroaded by Páez. When he sees that ball is in the glove, you've never seen a man with a larger smile on his face than knowing that we have not just blown the World Series by us running into each other like a Three Stooges routine.
There are a bunch of moments like that.
Oh, there were so many.
And this is why, like, obviously, like, you know, the next day, everybody's like trying to analyze, thinking where they went wrong. Well, if only this happened, and if only this happened, if only this happened, we'd be World Series champions. You realize how, like, it's pointless to nitpick these things, because a million of these things you could point to as reasons for why we didn't win this thing. It's not just this game. It's the several of the games prior that were so close. You know, if, like, I saw a lot of people get on what is this guy Kenner Falefa for his like short leadoff before trying to, like, you know, run home for that very close call towards, like, what was it, the ninth or 10th? I forget. Bottom of the ninth, right? Like when the bases were loaded and he got out.
Through that for both teams. Like there were those moments. Like we had Bichette, like, and the guy just can't run basically at this stage of his recovery process. There was the play at home that, I mean, Craig, could you have imagined if we had won this game off the challenge at home? That
would have been so sad, but yeah, it would have been possible.
I would have taken the
Raptors win, if you remember, was kind of like that. It was incredibly anticlimactic because it was on some sort of technicality and it was drawn out. Anyway, it's just sports, man. Like, this type of shit penalizes both teams, and therefore it's kind of fair. But fuck,
I'm not playing any of that day after stuff. I thought the Dodgers beat us. They came to, they were down 3-2. They beat us twice at home. And in game seven, like they just, they won. They were the better team after seven games. And I was.
You can't get mad at it. You know, you really
can't. No, there was nothing in these games that to me was like some outrage. There's not going to be, was this a penalty to Wayne Gretzky that will last throughout the rest of the Toronto Maple Leafs miserable lives for the next several decades. But yeah, I think Wayne and I are going down to Sarasota next year for spring training.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Probably not. No, probably not. but there you go. Any other thoughts? How did you watch game seven? Did the whole family stay up? How long did Lucas last?
No, absolutely not. Like this whole week, I feel like the whole 2 weeks, I feel kind of bad for our kids because like we really rushed them to bed. Usually we give them like a few more stories. Today is like you get one story, you're going right to sleep because we're going downstairs, we're trying to watch this game. So yeah, we've been really
Evie had no interest in this, so she went to bed around the third inning. I didn't let Max go to sleep. He was getting tired. I said, no, as long as they're winning, you're staying up. And he's like, okay. And then it's like it was like the 10th inning that I think he finally was like, just, he was not going to make it. And
was he getting into it? Like, did he understand?
He was following it. Like his friends down the street were like, they were also like watching it as well. He's not as much into it. Like he goes in waves. He was really into this at the beginning of the playoffs, but I mean, it's not the most kid friendly game, I guess. There's a lot to baseball. So he ended up going to sleep before the ending, which was fine. And then this morning we told him the outcome and he was pretty sad. He was not happy. But I got my my daughter made this sign that I sent away and we got a she made this Blue Jays poster and was cheering for the Blue Jays. Huh?
When did you send that to me?
I thought I messaged. Did I send this to you?
I don't think I got it. No,
I thought I did.
It's anyway. Okay.
Well, anyway.
But no, like I have friends in LA who are probably experiencing like the same, like the level of joy that is like as bad as we feel. I'm sure they feel just as great and the opposite. And I can't help but be happy for them because, you know, one of these teams was going to lose and this time it happened to be us. So why not? It's fine. Like in wrestling, like a loss after a great match only makes the losing person a bigger baby face. And I'm that much more interested in seeing this team finish the story, so to speak, at some point.
So I'm going to rattle off to you, Wei, some of our upcoming free agents. And I'm going to tell you what they're...
I've only been a fan for 2 weeks, man.
I'm going to tell you what they made this past year. And you're going to tell me yes or no they come back. Okay?
Sure.
So we have Chris Bassitt, who was pretty excellent up until game seven. He had a rough outing in game seven. Do you have any idea what Chris Bassitt is making in the bullpen?
No. How much?
$21 million for this reliever.
Well, what is an average?
That's the creme de la creme of relief pitchers.
Okay. Well, what's the comparison? So
I don't know. He's our highest paid free agent that is coming up. $21 million, 36 years old.
He's gone.
Is Chris Bassitt bye-bye. Coming back? Yeah, mm-mm. I think bye-bye. Max Scherzer, $15.5 million. He's also 41 years old, as they reminded us. I think this is it for Mad Max. He did us proud in game seven. I think they could have gone a bit longer with him, to be quite honest.
Mm. Would the result 41
is the new 31.
Would the result have been that different? I don't know.
Mm-mm. Who knows? Yeah. Did you see Hoffman's interview afterwards in the clubhouse afterwards?
I stayed on the City TV feed where they only stayed in the clubhouse interviewing all of these poor guys just like in tears, you know? Like there's just a level of... Yeah.
He's like, I cost everybody a World Series ring. I was like, oh, dude, you don't need to shoulder this one by yourself. Terrible. Anyway, Bo Bichette is the big one, Wei. Is he coming back?
I hope so. I think there's just like... Well, great, like sort of like, you know, story and appeal just simply from that perspective, you know, with he and Vladimir Guerrero being like best friends and having been in this organization for like 10 years. He probably would be the most gutting loss I sense, you know, from a fan perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it lists here, if this is accurate, he was at 11.2 million. He's going to command significant market value, I would say. Mm-hmm. So he's going to cost a ton to retain. They do have Menez at shortstop, which is would be his replacement, but we will see. He's the big one, obviously.
So, I mean, most of the team is coming back next year.
Most of the team, we don't have to go through all of these, but Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is mm-hmm. also a free agent. Sir Anthony Dominguez and Shane Bieber, there's a player option. So it's basically his call. Like, he gets a base level salary that is offered, and he can kind of decide if he stays or if he wants to go. So we do have Scherzer and Bieber and Bichette, as well as Chris Bassett in the bullpen. Those are the big ones that
I want to know, how money works in these situations. Is there a salary cap?
No, that's one of the, that is going to be the contentious issue for this next labor battle, is the owners wanting a salary cap, and the players, like a Chris Bassett being able to make $22 million, does not want a salary cap.
Okay, buddy. Rodgers, pay up. All right. You want to bring this championship to this.
Do you know
country?
How much
pay
money
up?
They made for this playoff run? Okay. Yes. They can afford yeah. any of these players. As much as people yeah. look at the Dodgers are the big bad payroll of the Dodgers.
We're number five.
They were number one. We were number five in the league yeah. in terms of payroll. So it's not like the Blue Jays are, you know, this small market operation. They have the funds that they could keep all of these players if they want to allocate it. And listen, the biggest argument for the Toronto Blue Jays is that when you have a hot team, you're not talking about a hot market for your team. It's a entire country that is mm-hmm. backing you. And you also own the network that broadcasts these games nationally. So there is maybe no better incentive than Rodgers in terms of this, basically this country's baseball team that you can fund and bring back these players if you choose or upgrade.
If the next time you get your Rodgers bill and they say, we've increased our rates coming up, but these increased rates are going to help us pay for a great new starting pitcher or like this great new free agent, would you be willing to pay $5 more on your cable bill?
If they did that, I would laugh so loud, because last year I switched everything to Bell. So you can jack up all the Rodgers prices you want, okay? Mm. They call me every month to come back. So next time they call and want me to come back to Rodgers, I'll see how the free agent talks are going. I'm like, all right, well, let's take a look at shortstop right now. How are talks with Bichette right now? Maybe I do want to change providers. Let's see.
Interesting.
All right. Final note, anything else?
No.
How was the City TV US feed that you watched for Game 7?
It was perfectly good, yeah, which is better than what I can say for most Sportsnet Sportsnet Plus subscribers, who I think had another outage.
The app apparently yeah. went down. I had no problem with the actual feed itself, but yeah, they had Go Fight Live servicing the app, it appears, which is really a pain in the ass, because when it's Game 7 of the World Series and you've got the Sportsnet app running and it crashes, you know what your first option should be? It should be a reliable VPN that can get you the American feed instantly, and boy, do we have a deal for you.
Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. You know, it's gotten really expensive to be a wrestling fan, so it's no surprise that VPNs have basically become an essential tool if you're watching wrestling week in and week out. I'm lucky. I live in a territory where I get full access to WWE programming and premium live events on one streaming service for one fee. But let's say I travel to the US for a month. You really think I'm going to juggle a bunch of different services just to keep up with Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and PLEs? Instead, I just boot up my NordVPN, set my location back to Canada, turn on my streaming service, and I'm good to go. I even have the NordVPN app installed right on my Apple TV. A couple clicks with my remote, no wires, no technical knowledge, done. So go to nordvpn.com/postwrestling, sign up for a 2-year plan, and you get 4 extra months for free with the 30-day money-back guarantee. nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Stay safe, save money, and take control of your internet with Nord.
And of course, we thank our friends at nordvpn.com/postwrestling for supporting us at Post Wrestling. It is really the tool that you want to use to watch, well, all of your sports entertainment.
It's a gift that keeps on giving. nordvpn.com/postwrestling. We have wrestling to discuss, Are you still in the
mood? Do we?
Yeah, I think we do.
I gotta say, it would have been impossible for me to cover the show last night. Even if I wanted to desperately, it would have been completely impossible. Even if I wanted to watch this after the fact, I would have been in zero mood to watch the show and talk about the show afterwards.
As I said on Friday when we were doing our news update, I understand they were doing this big punk match with Jey Uso. We're going to crown a new champion. I just had so little interest in this show going in. Like, if this had been taking place without any baseball going on, I just didn't find this to be all that gripping of a Saturday night's main event going in. And there was, I don't know, it something felt as well on this show. Well, first of all, let's talk about the format change, because this was the first exclusive show on Peacock. And I think we can certainly say that at least the pacing of this thing seemed a lot better, because we were not going to commercial breaks during the matches. They saved them for afterward. It was still pretty much a hard 2 hours in terms of when they were out. But I thought that it flowed a lot better, the matches, that is. And it was not as much interrupted by these necessary ad breaks you had on NBC.
Oh, very much so. It made the show watchable. You know, like the last shows that were taking place simulcast on NBC just made for incredibly unsatisfying experiences, because you were getting almost like snapshots of matches rather than like these full matches. And the way wrestling works is you kind of have to just sit with it for a while in order to really build momentum and to get like an extra amount of commercial breaks, even beyond what we're used to, either on, you know, at this point, Netflix or USA, just really made the experience awful for all of these matches that I think had, I mean, not all of them had high stakes, but some of them had really high stakes. And I found tonight, this show to be a much more engaging and overall enjoyable experience for sure.
Well, the site was, for the second night in a row, the Delta Center in Salt Lake City, Utah, and noting on the graphic, the Utah Sports Commission and Smith Entertainment Group. And boy, did they want us to know all about the great state of Utah, its college football program. We got to watch mascots wrestle on Friday night on SmackDown. This is what you can get if you want to send a money order, care of Mark Shapiro at a TKO Group Holdings.
Taxpayer dollars well spent, would you say?
I think so. I mean, yeah. If I was a resident of Utah, I would want to tune in and know that the Smith Entertainment Group and the Utah Sports Commission, they are bringing me the best. And in turn, WrestleTix announcing 7,867 tickets distributed. They opened up with a bit of a nostalgia open with Obsession and everyone getting around the television to watch Saturday night's main event, which now you have to get around your streaming device to watch exclusively. And that was about the only nostalgia, because for the second show in a row, no Jesse Ventura, which makes you wonder if Jesse Ventura is, he was there for the initial return wave of Saturday night's main event and has slowly moved on.
Yeah, I wonder if his commentary in that, whose match was it?
It was Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre, the cage match back in, maybe it was the May. It was the May show.
I wonder if that really was nailing the coffin for him, man. I mean, let's be honest. Like, I think beyond that initial curiosity of seeing Jesse attached to this like Saturday night's main event branding, I didn't think he offered all that much. You know, like as a draw, and it even feels like they're kind of moving away from nostalgia as a selling point for all of these shows, period. You know,
it's like a souped up version of Raw or SmackDown now. Like it still feels like enough of a show that can generate, like it doesn't feel like Battle of the Belts, for instance.
Yeah.
Cody Rhodes, Drew McIntyre opens up the show for the undisputed WWE Championship. They did a pretty strong segment to close SmackDown with these two to try and garner some interest in a program that sort of felt like it was not of grand interest several days out from Saturday night's main event. But the notable addition is the stipulation that the championship can now change hands on a DQ or count out, putting Cody Rhodes at his acting best to show his torn priorities. Attack Drew or keep my championship. Can he keep his anger in check way?
Can he refrain from using a title belt in the middle of a match?
Yeah, this should be a crisis of conscience that the House of Torture should have to go through.
Interesting.
Can we cheat or can we be honorable and keep our championship belts. Drew insists that Lillian Garcia refer to him as the real American Dream. And we start off and Drew is trying to make Cody snap. He bites him with the referee unable to see this. And Cody starts stomping away and then shoves referee Dan Engler away. This would have been the best end to his title run, shoving Dan Engler. But Dan Engler, it's playoff season. That means playoff rules. So Drew runs Cody's shoulder into the post, then into the timekeeper's area, and it's all Drew until Cody comes back with a superplex, disaster kick, Cody cutter, and a bionic elbow. So Drew rolls to the floor, and he gets the championship belt. Cody takes it away, but he's not going to use it. Cody throws the belt away, which has there been a better move this year for Cody than teasing the belt shot, but he just can't bring himself to do it. It's done him wonders this year.
How many times has he done it?
Well, there was WrestleMania and then this. So.
Why was he doing it at WrestleMania?
Well, remember he was John Cena was like tempting him to use the belt, but Cody would not do it.
Right. Yes. I'm sorry. I'm just maybe confusing it with like the 50 other times we've seen babyfaces do the spot. This was not as drawn out. This was like a pretty quick. I'm holding the title, not going to use it, throw it away. You know, like he's not even like convinced that people will bite into it this time around.
It is logical for his character as well not to use the belt here because if he's caught, he loses it. So he gets caught with a one-step claymore, which isn't a multi-step claymore. So we're learning the levels of what the claymore. This was the clayless. And Cody survives the claymore. And then Cody gets sent into the desk. And we get a shoulder tackle that sends Cody off the apron through the desk, and the count begins. And this crowd was getting into the count because they knew the stakes here. This is one instance where I do believe the 20 count would have made this so much more dramatic because it's a 10 count, and Cody's got to sell being thrown through this desk and then get up in time and be in at 9, which he is. So it continues. Cody then goes to the corner, and Dan Engler is in his way, and it causes Cody's knee to buckle as he goes to scale the turnbuckle. And then he does the exact same sequence over again and hits the Cody cutter for a near fall.
Drew didn't seem like it was meant to be there. I mean, it didn't feel like there was any sort of like purpose for that ref distraction. I think it was just Cody maybe improvising a way to get back to the spot.
Yeah, it felt like when you watched it, I was like, okay, that's a kind of clever spot to he torques the knee, which he has played up in the past. Mm-hmm. But then when he went to it right away after and hit it no problem, it kind of suggested that they probably just
cover up.
It just covered it that way, and the knee really didn't play into things after this. So Drew drives Cody into Dan Engler, who just takes a pounding in this match, goes down, and now Drew gets the belt. Cody ducks it, and they collide in the middle of the ring. Cody DDTs Drew on top of the belt, tosses it out, and hits a crossroads as Dan Engler counts 3 in 18 minutes and 45 seconds. Cody retains, but with help from the belt. Wait, let's get ready for part 3. I can't wait. Like what's the stipulation on that going to be?
No DQ. Wait, isn't that...
That's
not really fair, is it? Well, okay, so certainly they're teasing a third match. I mean, this could
maybe
also...
Maybe it's an I quit match.
Oh, God, I feel like I'm kind of sick
of those. Drew can't be screwed. He's got to say the words I quit.
Yeah. Well, okay, so certainly feels like they're extending this one, and this is not the first time we've seen like these sort of feuds with Cody where he beats somebody like 2 times to lead to a third match where he's likely
as
to
the
beat
champion.
Them again. Yeah, as the champion, where he's likely to beat them again. I'll just say like I thought the match tonight was very good. I thought they utilized this stipulation well to create like some pretty engaging moments, and the crowd I thought was especially into this countout tease, you know, with that bump off the apron. I thought Cody did a good job of like expressing his character's feelings. He does like almost to some, I'm sure, a very exaggerated job of doing it. But I also think that for a WWE type of like style, I think it works. It's clear enough to be like understandable for almost everybody, right? And that's a compliment, not any sort of like elitist criticism. But man, the feud by itself has not really been all that hot yet. And I mean, even though this match was good, it wasn't necessarily the sort of memorable, great match that I think we're expecting out of these two. Certainly doesn't match up to, like, I think the standard. Well, it's fine, but it's not like among the best we've seen of both men's catalog. So I think they're building up to a third one that might hopefully reach there. And I also think like they're deliberately now really, you know, trying to tease the Cody Rhodes heel tendencies to lead to something, right? Like, whether it be something coming up for Rumble season, Mania season, I certainly sense that, but I also sense that with every babyface, you know, up and down this card. But I, if the idea was to maybe tell the audience, hey, Cody might be turning heel, we want you guys to start thinking about it, I thought this was successful.
Yeah, I just don't see Cody turning at the end of this whole thing.
I think Dwayne Johnson is coming in, and he's going to continue to offer, this guy to get his soul and all that shit. Yes.
Let's try this again. As he gets out the Rubik's Cube, and we get into Mania season.
Yeah.
The match was good on a show that kind of good was sort of your baseline.
Yeah, the finish I thought was notable in that, like, the audience could have, at some point, if they really liked Cody, they could have cheered him doing the DDT on the belt. But here, I thought they were actually kind of silent, even booing a little bit, which I think is the intended reaction if the idea is for them to, again, tease Cody's heel teases.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holidays are fast approaching, but why not get your shopping done early and actually enjoy it? Uncommon Goods makes your holiday shopping easy and fun with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. I found this super cool Starry Night Air Fort. It's basically a blow-up fort covered in glow-in-the-dark stars. You just hook it up to a box fan, and in less than a minute, you have this awesome little space for the kids to play, or even for grown-ups to sneak in and have fun. It's lightweight, easy to pack away, and really great for relaxing or imaginative play at home. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting small businesses and artists, and with every purchase, they even give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. So shop early, have fun, and cross those names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Aldis met with Tiffany Stratton to make sure to see how she's doing and if she's ready for this fight. What if her answer was no?
Well, then, is Aria available to take her place?
I don't know. This would be really short notice because the match was coming up next. All the celebrities were out. Pauly Shore, Tony Hinchcliffe, and as Michael Cole referred to, in his opinion, the best entertainer in the world today, Taylor Post Malone.
His opinion.
Yeah, Michael Cole. He's a big Post Malone fan.
Can we say he's wrong? Have you been to a Post Malone concert?
No, I have not. Okay. I wouldn't be averse to it.
No, so he could be right.
I mean, you know, he's halfway there, like he could be the official musician of our site.
Has Michael Cole been to a Pauly Shore show? Is the bigger question.
I bet you he's never been to the Cellar, and I bet you he has never
comedy store. I think he's a comedy store.
Oh, sorry, I think of the Comedy Store. You're right. Yeah. Yes. I bet he hasn't even seen a Pauly Shore movie. That'd be my guess.
Biodome, Encino Man, excuse me?
Yes.
No?
Okay. Probably not. Probably not. Tiffany Stratton and Jade Cargill for the Women's Championship. Stratton is working with the knee injury from the attack, and Jade kicks out the leg, as Michael Cole says, shades of Bret Hart with that move, which is a first for Jade Cargill. Shades of Bret Hart.
Shades of Owen, okay, yes.
Did kind of kick the leg out of the leg here. Mm-hmm. Stratton goes for the prettiest moonsault ever, but her knee buckles and ends up in the Tree of Woe. So it is just Jade destroying her and runs her face first into the steps. Stratton comes back, hit the Swanton, and Jade responds with the Eye of the Storm, 3 fallaway slams, multiple power bombs, and then stands over Tiffany, lifts her, jaded, and wins. Pretty dominant fashion here in 5.5 minutes as Jade wins the title, ending Stratton's reign at 302 days. So they went, they just went with, I'll say Jade as your kind of dominant heel in a short match. I think it's a much better formula for her at this point, rather than having to sell for half of the match and make the comeback at the end. I mean, they kept this very short, and it was largely her on offense for 80% of it.
I actually really like this. You know, this was our first chance at seeing, within the WWE at least, Jade Cargill wrestling as a heel. And I would say it was one of her rare performances where I felt like there was nothing she did that I could criticize. I mean, for one thing, they kept the match short enough, but I also thought like they utilized her strengths perfectly. Her role was to come out here and look strong doing her power moves. And I thought it all worked well in maintaining this illusion of her being this like Goldberg like character, you know. Especially I loved seeing her do the fallaway slam and powerbomb multiple times. It is something so simple, but I think so memorable within a match too. Obviously it's worked for Brock Lesnar with Suplex City, worked for Wardlow, and I'm kind of surprised it's taken this long for like Jade Cargill to employ something like that. But I thought those were great spots within the match.
Instead of coming up with 10 moves for you, we're gonna come up with 2, and mm-hmm. you're gonna do them a lot, and you're gonna do them effectively.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that, and I hope she retains that as part of this new character. Tiffany had very little to do here, but you know, if you're going to put Jade over, you'd want this match to look as dominant as possible by giving Tiffany Stratton as little as possible. So I thought it was a great start to this run. I'll say, like, for Stratton, this was also like a bit of a rare chance for us to just see a match where she was mainly selling and mm-hmm. not being able to rely on her, you know, great athleticism or like cool moves, which she's usually able to do. And I'll say, for me, it showed that her selling still leaves a lot to be desired. I thought, it's one of those things that, like, you cannot gain from great athletic ability. You gain it mainly just from experience and from doing it a lot. So I think she still probably needs some work in that department. But as a way to just kick off this Jade Cargill heel run, I thought this was perfect.
Yeah, and it's one... I don't know what the match would actually produce, but you do have this dynamic now that you've turned Jade that down the road, and this could, like, I would say Mania would probably even be too soon for this, but you have like a Jade Rhea Ripley match down the road that could be like the two big dominant females of each brand. That could be a big match if they protect each other and Jade can like maintain a level here. Like, this is going to be, again, Jade is going to be under a microscope here now with this title and how she can produce as champion.
But we have like a Goldberg style of template. We have a Brock Lesnar style of template. And not to say like Jade is, you know, like a similar performer for either of them. But like, if we think like the template is for this big heel monster to keep their matches short and dominant, I think there are ways that you can, you know, make this feel even more successful. So I'm excited to see what these future title matches are going to be like. I'm also hoping that like what happens usually with maybe new stars that are put in this sort of spotlight, I hope to see the improvement accelerated to a much higher degree with the pressure being that much higher on somebody like Jade Cargill. Of course, we have Bianca Belair someday coming back from this finger injury, and that
WrestleMania 45.
Yeah, so we got that. You know, at some point, Naomi's going to come back, too, and she has history with Jade Cargill. So.
Will Naomi be back before Bianca?
Will Naomi and Jimmy Uso's child be back before Bianca Belair? Will they make it into the WWE before Bianca?
They announced back-to-back nights at the Bell Center in Montreal for Friday, January 23rd, and the next Saturday night's main event, that is January 24th, which is a week before the Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia. So they will have all of those shows to be building toward in January. Dominic Mysterio, Penta, and Rusev for the Intercontinental title. Rusev was dominant throughout the beginning of this match. We worked up to several dives from Penta and Dominic. And then the scariest thing at Halloween occurred 24 hours later for this one child in the front row who is heckling Rusev. And Rusev screamed at this poor child who just screamed because Rusev yelled, "I'm coming for you." Sorry, he yelled, "I'm coming for you" at the title, not at the child. That might have put the kid right into therapy. But yeah, this kid looked frightened.
Yeah, some kids are into it, some kids aren't. I mean, are you seeing what like FTR is doing after every one of their matches? I mean, it's actually one of the highlights of these matches, seeing them rile these kids up ringside. But yeah.
There was a drop toe hold. Dominic goes for the 619. Crowd was into Dominic. This isn't a Triple A level, but they were still got a good reaction coming out here. Dominic does the Eddie spot where he hands the chair over to Rusev and the ref turns around and he doesn't care because it's no DQ in a triple threat match. So this one backfires and Penta super kicks the chair into Rusev and then comes off of Rusev's back into a Mexican destroyer onto Dominic as he rolls out. Penta would get out of the way of a Machka kick and hits the Penta driver for a big near fall on Rusev, then comes off the top and is caught with the Machka kick. Accolade is applied and the bell rings. And I don't think a person here believed that this was the end of the match because they can tell that it's Dominic. Why? Because Michael Cole, that's not Berkeley. And it is Dominic with the bell hammer. So Rusev grabs Dominic with the hammer, rolls him into the ring, and Michael Cole, who has been doing this for 28 years, doesn't understand why Dominic rang the bell. Why did he do that? And Wade Barrett explains, well, he was trying to stop the submission because he would have lost his belt. That's a great point, Wade. I think there's some basics of stuff that Michael Cole like just has not always put together in matches.
It's true. But I also know like, I mean, anybody can have a bit of a brain fart moment, right? Like when you're live broadcasting and just kind of having to fill the air with your words as much as he does. Maybe this was one of those moments for Cole. Maybe.
Could have been. Rusev gets thrown into the steps. Penta grabs the hammer, but Dominic ducks. And then Penta nails Rusev with the hammer. So that puts Rusev down. Dominic sends Penta into the post. Frog splash to Rusev. And Dominic pins Rusev in 12 and a half minutes to retain the Intercontinental title.
Mm-hmm. So I thought the match was all right. You know, like fast paced, good action. Built almost entirely around Rusev as the like lone heel threat here. Because it's still very obvious that like Dom, I would say, was the biggest babyface in this match above Penta, who, you know, again, brings great in-ring quality, but he doesn't really have the connection at this point with the audience.
He's slotted now among the audience. They see him at a level, and that's sort of like where they are. They don't view this guy as someone that is breaking through to the next level and see him as a potential main eventer, and I don't think most of them bought him as winning this IC title either.
Still got a great entrance. I mean, I imagine might still sell a good amount of merch, but man, they're just like kind of like cooling that guy off to a great amount until
he's not posing for a picture after Saturday night's main event
with
alumni from Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, what? What do you mean?
Did you not see the
no,
Punk
I didn't.
Photo?
No,
Punk
no.
took a photo with Cody, Ricky Saints, and Jade all holding their belts after Saturday night's main event. I'm surprised you didn't see this today.
I haven't really been online, but fuck, this is so, I mean, it's so petty.
Nah, this was your troll photo of the night.
I love it. I love it. No, we didn't get that with Penta. It could have been Rusev here too, but yeah.
Maybe we should get the alternative one with Penta, Lexus King, Rusev.
Phoenix, don't forget.
And the Snake Man, yeah.
Yeah. No, they're just like, I feel like they're, I don't know if they're intentionally cooling. Well, I don't think they're intentionally cooling Penta off. It's just, they don't have a role for him. They're not writing for him. So we await the Lucha Brothers reunion. They seem like right.
He was
right
kind
now.
Of in this program with the New Day that just came to an abrupt end. And the New Day, I don't know if there's something going on. Like, they're not even on TV right now.
He's better off not being attached to the New Day at this point. But yeah, Penta's fine. Like, he's in this role where he can give great matches. But we all wait the tag team reunion with Rey Fénix, who also is really doing nothing right now over on SmackDown.
Actually, he's standing on boxes to stand up to Tala Tonga.
Yes. Yes, yes, God. He is. Yeah. I don't know if the Eddie stuff worked as well, like, to this crowd, or even like maybe just to my own viewing in this match. Like, it's cute. Of course I get it. It's sort of Dom's thing right now, but I also kind of like, I'm looking for them to evolve that, like, beyond just this now being an Eddie tribute act, which, I don't know. Like, I know it's been over 20 years since like Eddie's been doing this stuff, and it's probably brand new to most of the audience right now. But I
don't think this stuff is brand new to any person that has watched wrestling mm-hmm. over the last 20 years.
Yeah,
because there has been no person mimicked more than Eddie Guerrero in these last 20 years.
No, well, like I think we joke that like Eddie Guerrero is one of the most overexposed wrestlers in modern wrestling. Because of how often people do a spot.
Next week is the 20th anniversary of his death. There's been no one more memorialized in, like, across promotions. It's not just a WWE thing.
I know. Anyway, I'm hope, like, Dom is also like an interesting case in that, okay, he's very clearly a babyface, but I also feel like to certain crowds, the more you push him as a babyface, the less cool it becomes to cheer for him. So I think they have to straddle that line where they still have to maintain that heel edge. And I mean a real heel edge, not the cute Eddie Guerrero type of like pseudo heel edge, but like an actual hateable sometimes heel edge to make us like want to rebel against it so that we want to cheer for him. So I wonder how they'll toe that line.
Yeah, and I mean with this Cena thing coming up, I mean you're gonna want him in that role, and I think, you know, against the right person like a Cena, you can easily get him into that hateable kind of role. And speaking of Cena, he's done a sit-down interview with Tom Rinaldi that's going to be airing shortly. And then he reveals a 16-man tournament that will start next Monday, November the 10th, in Boston. And it will feature talent from Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and some who don't even work here. What a promise. I can't wait.
Yeah, so I mean, let's let the speculation begin. Who do you think will be a part of this?
Gunther. I think Gunther will be part of this.
Okay. But I mean, surprise names, like who could you see?
I mean, outside, I mean, when you're talking like realistically,
Matt Cardona, I can see.
Matt Cardona was one I thought about, especially at the Garden, which is the following week that this tournament will be going on. Like, that would make sense to have him in New York City. Like, again, it's 16-man tournament. You're talking about a Cardona that could come in. He could even win a match and then lose in the second round.
I don't see him winning a match. No way.
Yeah, he might just
lose. He doesn't even win on NXT. He's not winning on Raw or SmackDown.
I mean, Mance Warner, that's an obvious, right?
He's coming in.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Maybe Rick Bassman can bring in... a legion of UPW
Chris Daniels,
graduates
Samoa
to
Joe.
Face the prototype.
Yeah, bring them all in.
You know what? I could see on the TNA side, Frankie Kazarian potentially, who literally does.
I don't
think
he's known enough. They didn't even shout about like when AJ did that move. You know.
Well, I think you will see at least like a Joe Hendry could be in this.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can have a lot of fun with this tournament, but
it gives an opportunity for people like The Miz and Sheamus, who do have a history with Cena, to like tell their Cena story and maybe have some level of Cena interaction without actually taking up one of the match spots.
I hope they do a Cena tribute spot in every single tournament match. Wouldn't that be awesome?
What, like, they're going to run out of spots pretty quickly if everybody.
What if they just do that? That's back and forth every
he
match.
He doesn't have. So how many matches are going to be part of this? At least eight, and then what? Four, and then two. 8-4-2. That's 13 matches. He doesn't have 13 moves.
You got to just get creative. Like, maybe Matt Cardona can just like, he can have a lav mic on and he can call his spots out really loud so the whole arena hears. Like, you can do other tributes to John as well.
But it's a good way to promote the last Cena match. It's a great way to like strap some sort of like promotional rocket towards whoever's going to face him at the end.
It's easy pops too. Like, this is one I don't see them announcing the brackets in advance, because I think they want to have the surprise of like who's going to be the opponent. And listen, one person from TNA, that person's going to get a pop. If they do a Matt Cardona, that's going to get a pop. Like, you're going to have several of those surprises that you can put in easy. And that's one reason I don't think they'll announce all of these participants on Monday.
They shouldn't.
It'll just be surprises. Yeah.
Yeah. So just one other thing. So the first match is taking place at that Boston show.
Boston. Yes.
Does that tell you that Cena won't be wrestling at that show?
It kind of doesn't make any sense for him to wrestle on those shows. He's got to set up his angle for Survivor Series on these shows as well. I mean, I can't completely throw it out as him not wrestling, but it kind of seems unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah. This will be the Cena segment for the show.
Yeah. And being that these are his last two Raws, I'm sure he's going to be all over these episodes as well.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Jey Uso, CM Punk for the World Heavyweight Championship, the vacant World Heavyweight title. Punk came out in a Duke Rufus inspired hoodie here, or jacket.
Also on Duke his Rufus. Tights. Also
on his
logo.
Tights as well. Yeah, yeah. And Michael Cole made mention of Duke Rufus and dedicating this match to him as well. So that part was nice that they included this here as well. So this match was like two matches. The first half was these two just wrestling. And it to me, these two did not click at all in terms of just actually having to wrestle one another. There was the neckbreaker spot that everyone has focused on that was just brutal. And then they just went to near falls. And that was the second half of this match. And that's what the crowd loved. They loved the near falls and guys kicking out at 2 3/4. And at that point, they got into this. And like after two near falls, this is awesome. Like on cue. This in some ways was like the most patterned WWE laid out match that you could, and tells you what they script these matches for. It's like, let's just get to the near falls. And that's when the crowd awakens. And that's when, because I just did not find that these two together, like as two baby faces, whatever you want to say, I just did not think the first like 10 minutes of this worked for me.
So unfortunately, like, I think this is one of the things that wrestling suffers from, and it's a lack of variation in how long matches last. That means every wrestling match is expected to have a portion where they're starting slow, then they ramp things up, and then babyface shines, heel, you know, it takes control, and then you go to the finish. It's a template, and it's a template that's worked for, I mean, you know, 100 years, but like it also kills at this point, like some of the engagement of the early portions. So we're all trained to only expect, you know, something special later on in the match. And I mean, we've seen like some, you know, matches be able to break that, like, you know, like that Brock Lesnar Goldberg formula. But it's not something you'd expect out of most of your matches, you know?
Well, so they had the messed up neckbreaker spot. So Punk has to redo it. And Wade continually notes to us, these are not 100 mile per hour type wrestlers. Jey wrestles at a slow pace, kind of like Roman Reigns. Like, all right, you're really adding a lot of fuel to the fire here for this match. I was not all that into at this point. So Punk bridges from underneath, hits the GTS, and Jey rolls to the floor, saving himself. So Punk is worried. So he goes to get a bottle of water and pours it onto Jey to get him up and rolls him into the ring. And my question was, why? What would have happened if Jey was counted out here?
It's not been established that you can win the vacant championship on a countout.
Well, you can't lose.
What do you mean?
Well, Punk can't lose the title if it's a countout.
I know, but he's also not guaranteed to actually win the championship either. They haven't established that.
He's the winner, though.
But it doesn't matter. They could say it's still vacant because it's, you know, title doesn't change hands on a countout. He didn't want to take that chance.
Okay, well, Jay fights back with strikes and hits the spear and an Uso splash, and that gets a reaction. Punk hits a superplex, and if you look in the background, Post Malone is on his feet cheering this superplex, you know, the second most famous Malone to play in this arena, and follows with a running knee and bulldog, calls for the GTS, but Jay hits a super kick, suicide dive. At this point, they get things going. He spears Punk through the timekeeper's area. I thought Punk was dead here. Hits the Uso, goes for the Uso splash, landing on the knees, and then gets hit with another GTS, and Jay kicks out. Jay stops a pile driver. He hits his own GTS. Punk then spears Jay, and we're trading finishers. So Punk hits, I don't know, the 50th GTS, bounces off the ropes, onto Punk's shoulders, goes for another, but Jay catches him into a rear naked choke. Punk counters to the Anaconda Vice, and they battle to the rope. And then with Jay going for the super kicks, a spear gets stopped by a kick, and Punk hits a final GTS. I'm sorry, the penultimate GTS, because he hits another one and pins Jay after 21 minutes, and CM Punk is your world heavyweight champion.
Bad night for things named Jay. Saturday.
Ooh, I didn't even, yeah, that was a rough one.
So, I mean, I think you make valid points about maybe like how well they might have connected for that slower portion, but I also didn't really weigh that much of my opinion on this match on that slower portion, because I too am conditioned to only really, like, you know, value a match based off of like mostly what happens towards the end. And I thought what happened towards the end, or at least the second half of this match, was great. Like, it greatly exceeded my expectations. I thought,
say what you want about Brock, but he's like, why don't we just cut out that whole 10 minutes? We just go right to the final 8 minutes. And that's kind of the Brock template for the last decade.
Well, he gets by with it because, like, his offense looks so impressive. And, like, if you're Bron Breakker, you can get by with that. Maybe Jade Cargill can get by with that, too. These guys are not guys who move at, 100 miles per hour, okay, John?
All Wade's right, so. Words, not mine.
but like, once they got to all of that stuff, I thought the match was really exciting. It to me, had, like, by the end, an epic feel, with really strong near falls, stealing finishers, multiple finishers, and all that stuff. Like, I thought really worked on me, certainly really worked on the crowd. The lack of commercial breaks completely made this match. Can you imagine this match with commercials? I think it would have been awful. I'd go as far as to say, I thought this was one of Jey Uso's best singles matches, you know, and it's not entirely because of Punk. I thought Jey's own style was like slightly different from maybe what he's, you know, shown in the past. He was far more active, relying on great timing and providing, I think, strong variation on his offense. I loved him pulling out the sleeper, which is something he hasn't really done since the Gunther feud. And it made perfect sense here, not just as a callback to the last time he won a championship, but of course to, you know, counter with the Anaconda Vice and whatnot. But I overall really enjoyed this match. I thought Punk was excellent, and I thought they provided a great performance, both of them, overall.
You know, I thought the last 5 minutes, like, they really did have the audience here. They had the stakes of the championship. I mean, what you can say about Punk is that, like, this guy is smooth would be the furthest word I would ever come. But it's just this guy that is, like, he's playing the role of 47-year-old Phil Brooks that just has to scrape by, and everything is a struggle, and he can do it in a compelling fashion.
He was never the smoothest, though, even in his prime.
No, mean, this was not Zack Sabre Jr. 20 years ago.
But he still has great matches, and I think so much of it is just, I mean, from like a knowing how to structure a match, having great timing, and just the will, you know, to execute the way he does.
Well, that was it. No angle or anything after the fact. Just Punk thinking about his photo op in the back, and
So I thought we'd have something with Jimmy, you know, because of like the tease of like, you know, those
and they
shots
did show him. He was warming up with Jay in the back. So he was there, but no involvement in the match.
They're totally cool with each other at this point. But like when this match was first announced as a result of that, like, was it four-way or something? Like they framed that shot with Jimmy Uso right in the background, staring daggers at the both of them. But they kind of diffused that on Raw and therefore nothing really came into play. I imagine they'll continue that story in some other way on Raw. But where do you think this goes from with CM Punk being champion now?
Yeah, well, I certainly expect him to be part of War Games, so I don't think you need a challenger immediately. And it's kind of tough because you would figure that all the people that would be in that listing are probably going to be in the Cena tournament in a lot of ways. So you don't really need a challenger.
I don't think Braun will be in it. Do you?
Well, I don't see them going to Braun this close to Punk. Like that could be a Royal Rumble match, and really you don't need a big Punk title match like until the new year. Like they'll probably do something in December for him. Like that's a long time. But I think he'll be attached to War Games, and that'll take him through November, and maybe he's on this Saturday night's main event card on the Cena final match.
Do you have a prediction for the War Games match at this point?
I imagine it's going to be Roman and company against the Vision and company.
Okay, interesting.
And who makes out the Vision's team at this point? Because obviously you need added people.
So they had, of course, Breaker take out LA Knight on Monday as a way to just like kill any other, you know, what is it, number one contenders ahead of Punk winning the championship. But I mean, I imagine they'll start telling the Breaker CM Punk story as soon as Monday, right? If War Games,
how long could you hold off on that match with Breaker? Could you wait until the Rumble, which is the end of January?
I think you can. Like with War Games,
there's no reason to do that beforehand. The Rumble is the next major show that you could see that match happening.
Yeah.
Happening at. And if they do it at the Rumble, I would expect the title change at the Rumble.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I could too.
Decent show. I didn't find it to be all that memorable of one. I thought that the WWE match of the weekend was that Ilya Dragunov Nathan Frazier match from SmackDown on Friday, which was that to me blew away anything on this show. There was also a really great Bandido Máscara Dorada match on Collision on Saturday. So that was among some of the weekend's highlights. Plus we had a New Japan, which I'm going to save our thoughts for New Japan for Monday night's Rewind to Raw, because we are going to be dropping Karen and Bruce's review first thing Monday morning. They're going to be going through the Tanahashi final homecoming event. The major takeaways on that show being that it looks to be Konosuke Takeshita, Yota Tsuji, champion versus champion with both titles on the line at Wrestle Kingdom for January the 4th.
Interesting direction. Yeah, that I didn't necessarily expect, but I
Tsuji
like
and Tanahashi, I thought was amazing. I thought it was so good. I just thought Tanahashi, it was like, hopefully he has a match this good on January 4th. And I think they will, because the crowd is going to be so amazing. Like this was his hometown, but we're talking 3,200 people that were here versus the Tokyo Dome that legitimately could be full. That's not a crazy prediction to make, but I just thought these two, Tsuji was excellent and Tanahashi was just so good. Like a lot of the traits, like he's a better CM Punk in that here's another guy that is like battling age and it's not smooth, but it's all in the struggle. And there were some like captivating like near falls and he just played it so well. I just thought these two had just a hell of a match. I enjoyed this more than anything else on the show. And there were some very good matches on the show, but this one to me really stood out. And next weekend, it will be Tanahashi against Yuto Ice on a New Japan Road show. And yeah, cool. Ice came out to challenge him. So they're going to do that. And I'm thinking that will probably be where we get the reveal of the January 4th opponent, because they didn't hint in any direction beyond a segment with Ghetto approaching Tanahashi in the back and telling him that you don't have an opponent yet, I can make it happen. So
knowing that Takeshita and Tsuji is the Wrestle Kingdom title match, do you expect Tanahashi to close the show?
I would have Tanahashi close the show myself.
Yeah, yes. Me too.
Yeah, yeah, I think they should. I don't know if they will. They might look at this as the match. I can understand the argument of wanting to put your future in that main spot, but this show is going to be so much around Tanahashi, and I guess it kind of depends on the opponent, but I kind of feel like you want to end it with the Tanahashi return.
Tanahashi is the reason why most of the people, almost everybody, bought a ticket. And depending on the result, I mean, it could really impact, I think, the energy for this Takeshita Tsuji match. But I'm glad to see that they went with like a homegrown guy rather than, you know, like an Okada even.
Yeah, and it's like if he had had a terrible match with Tanahashi, this might not have been met with the same enthusiasm. Like, it helped that it came off like what I thought was like a really compelling match with Tsuji and Tanahashi. So that is a
Karen and Bruce will have a review out in the Post Wrestling Cafe feed sometime late this evening / early morning on Monday. Right now, currently, we have Kate from Montreal and John Clanchester talking about AEW Collision. Fright Night Collision, I should say, including that Bandido Mascara Dorada match that's current. That's out right now in the Post Wrestling Cafe.
November on the Post Wrestling Cafe will include Rewind Away, looking at some of the biggest retirement matches in pro wrestling history, with selections from All Japan Pro Wrestling, WWE, and Stardom, among others. Plus, we'll have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322 from Madison Square Garden, and the Tanahashi Final Homecoming. John and Wei will be taking all of your questions on this month's installment of Ask Away, and John gets together with Brandon from New Jersey for a Season 4 retrospective of 90210. All that and so much more. Join now at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door. We're going to go and do some feedback. Are you ready, Wei?
I am. Let's go.
Okay, we're going to start off with
John. Robbie titled this thread, the feedback thread, Saturday night's main event / game 7 therapy session. So I'm looking forward to some of this.
We welcome all feedback. We start off with Robbie from London. I did not watch Saturday night's main event, but watched my first World Series in a lifetime thanks to Post Wrestling during Game 7. I texted a couple of friends and said how stressed I was. He said, "Isn't baseball fun? Welcome to the fan base. I'll definitely be back next year. Jay's got as close as humanly possible. Good job, boys." There you go.
Well, I've been amazed at like the amount of people. Like, I thought we were disrupting our schedule and that people would be pissed off. I've had zero complaints, and instead I've had plenty of people like kind of like appreciating the fact that, like, you know, like we're either giving them a reason to kind of jump on the bandwagon as well, or just like they seem to appreciate hearing the enthusiasm. So that's really been great. They lost, but they gained, I think, more sympathy than ever. Just like a great, like Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania 39, you know, Tetsuya Naito losing to Okada. Like, this is a great setup for a comeback. So, all right, let's go to Brandon from Oshawa. I started Saturday night's main event at 7, stopped it at 8 to watch game 7. I'm a sports fan. Most importantly, a diehard Boston sports fan. I bleed the colors of all Boston sports teams since I was a kid. So does my brother. So does my dad. We're also diehard Toronto sports haters, with the exception of the Blue Jays for myself. I did have a Robbie Alomar hat as a kid. I have a Pat Borders autograph somewhere. So while not a fan, they pulled me in, and I watched more baseball in these past 2 weeks that wasn't Red Sox than I ever have. With that said, this was such a sweet win for the Dodgers. As a diehard Toronto sports hater, this may be one of the greatest moments of my sports fandom, right up next to the Bruins' comeback against the Leafs in 2013. Toronto is used to being a loser fan base, having to suffer through so much failure over the years, but this was another level that they haven't experienced in my lifetime. To come so close and to choke like this in extra innings of Game 7 of the World Series, in which you went home with a 3-2 lead, is masterful levels of comedy, and now all the bandwagoners will hop off until the next time the Jays get close and these people want to actually come back around and call themselves fans. People can get captured in as fake fans because they want to feel a part of something. Every fan base has them, but they will never know the true joy of going through it all with your team and then seeing them win the big one. There is no feeling like it.
You can kiss my ass.
Sorry, Todd Stottlemyre wanted to interject.
Yeah, I mean, it's I love the passion, dude. Like, you can cheer for your favorites and maybe be upset at the people that are cheering for your not favorites. I think it's just part of the fun of it all.
I will not stand though for the criticism of the bandwagon fans, because these are the same people that, if it was the other way around and the Rogers Center was not sold out last night and these television numbers were normal, just be like, this isn't a baseball town. These people won't even show up for the biggest series in the Jays history this generation. These would be the same people complaining that people are not showing up. The reason that some of these free agents are going to come back are because of me buying this hat, okay? So I hate the argument against bandwagon fans. That's any sport. That's any large event that is going to capture the broader population to all come into uniformity towards one goal.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me either way. I think if people want to feel a certain level of ownership for having been a longer fan than other people, then great. Congratulations. Like, it doesn't mean that, I don't know, like somebody else can't take pleasure in it via their own ways. I feel like all of this, yes, it's a very communal experience, but it's also a very personal experience. And everybody has a starting off point at some point. So this is probably it for a lot of people. Enjoy it or don't enjoy it. I don't give a shit. Let's go to your turn.
Let's continue on, and we go to Andy. Commiserations on the World Series. It's unfortunate that Todd Boehly gets to celebrate success while foisting all this garbage on Chelsea. I have no idea what any of those references are. I'm sorry, Andy. On the flip side, I'd recommend getting behind the Indian women's cricket team for a dose of catharsis. Is Jay going to turn heel and take the belt off Punk en route to a WrestleMania match with Reigns? Those were a lot of thoughts. Condensed into three sentences.
I don't sense that. I mean, I think it's very clear to me that like Punk Breaker is the direction that we're going to, with Breaker taking it off of Punk to eventually face Rollins whenever he comes back. I don't think Jay has a role in that. I think the other big part of this Saturday night's main event build, the other big talking point to come out of it is the fact that like there has been certainly growing sentiment against Jey Uso as a babyface or as somebody who's in these sort of title picture situations, right? To the point where Jey is even recognizing it now via response. He tweeted something to the effect of like, y'all win, you know, as just as if to say your complaints were heard. And he's playing into it, of course, but they're teasing some sort of Jey. They're sort of like fanning the flames of this like negative sentiment towards Jey Uso, although you wouldn't be able to tell from hearing that crowd reaction like to that entrance tonight. But there is something there, you know.
So they'll turn Jey, they'll turn Cody. Let's have no baby faces. Let's have no baby faces, because if anything's over the last 3 years have shown us, top baby faces are very overrated in pro wrestling.
People just seem sick of Jey. I personally think it's because people really want to see LA Knight get those positions instead. And I think Knight will. Like, he seems like a prime candidate to me to like win the Rumble, for instance. But yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe they'll just run with the Jey Uso heel thing. I'm kind of interested in that. Do you want to watch some female quick cricket, John?
Sure. Let's get on our VPN. We'll start following.
Jeremy in Texas. If you like the Dodgers, you like kicking puppies. I was a bit surprised we saw clean finishes in all four matches and no angles starting up War Games. I thought the pacing was with commercials. Wait, I thought the pacing was better than Saturday night's main event on NBC.
Agreed.
Yes. A few questions. Who is next for Cody? There does not seem to be any fresh heels ready. Is it time to turn Randy? I think Drew is next.
No, Drew was before, during, and after.
Yeah. But Randy is like, you know, waiting at some point. So it could be, well, what's Mania like for Cody right now?
Cody and Randy could be Mania.
Yeah. Of course, it all hinges on one man and what his Mania plans are as well. Okay. Smashing Machine on streaming eventually. We'll see.
Maybe
how
it's
well
Mark
that
Kerr.
Does.
Mark Kerr and Cody.
Yeah. I think a lot of it hinges on Dwayne Johnson, unfortunately. How do you see this Punk title reign lasting? It seems like Breaker would be the next guy. When do you make the switch? I think we talked about that.
Yeah.
Rumble seems right. Higher price ticket in the struggling Canadian market. Game 7 or the TKO priced elimination chamber?
Well, we found one event that outpriced a WWE TKO premium live event.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Game 7 in the World Series. On to Mike. What?
Your wife had tickets to this that she eventually...
Not really. She got into the queue and she bought them on behalf of a friend.
Gotcha.
Who ended up going. Yes. And those were 500 level seats and they cost $1,200.
So, I mean, did she express any regret about not going during the game? And how does she feel after the game?
She was definitely happy we didn't go after the game. I mean, a little bit more than she was on the fence about going. I was not as, I did not want to spend $1,200 on tickets, and quite frankly, like,
but what if they won?
I didn't want to be in that big crowd, to be quite honest. It's like, I'm not that interested. I need Dan Shulman and Buck Martinez, and I'm
You were
good.
Willing to go to the City Hall after they won.
Yeah, but I could move if I'm down there. I'm on a bike.
Gotcha.
You're stuck in the I would have been in the middle. I can't get up. It's not my thing.
And everybody suffers from FOMO.
But not me.
Your turn.
Mike writes, nothing really stood out with the four matches in 2 hours. WWE seemed to play it safe with Tiffany and Jade. Cody and Drew had its own excitement for a moment, having the stipulation at the last minute. Does Monday Night Raw not have enough heels to face off against Cody? Cody's not even on Raw. We're keeping
have you not been? Are you not aware of the who every single person on each roster? Okay, they make it very clear. All right.
Yes. He asks, do we have to have a third match with Drew? We do. Yes. Punk and Jay was fine. After all these weeks of interference and triple threats, they decide to book this match as clean. I expect Punk to drop the title as soon as the Rumble. I think I enjoyed the Dominic Rusev Penta match the most. It's pretty clear that Dominic is not losing the title anytime soon. Also very clear that WWE has no real plans for Rusev. This is his third loss to Dominic. They could easily have just beaten Penta. It's obvious his role is more important as a top babyface. On a scale of 1 to 10, I gave this show a 6.
I think Rusev, the talent is there. You can argue the talent is stronger than ever with him, but he's just not been able to connect. I think he needs some sort of he needs better supporting material for him beyond.
He's in the exact role I would have him in. I don't see him needing to be much higher. Is he one of the top five guys in the company on the heel side?
I think there's potential there. Think about the heights that he achieved, even not being pushed, during his initial run. Think of Rusev Day.
We're going 8 years back.
But what's to say you can't achieve that again with him? It's not like the performer's diminished. I think he's still just as strong, if not better, because he can talk now.
You've got guys like Bron Breakker. You've got Bronson Reed. I don't know. It's like he came back, and this is the role I saw for him. I don't see him being
expected more.
Much higher than this.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go. Brian, who says, as a show that was only available for streaming, it was nice to get what felt like a more full-fledged wrestling show than what we previously had on Peacock. Longer matches, more steak than sizzle, and only one noticeable commercial break about midway through. I liked Punk and Jay the most, despite some hiccups in it. Dom's antics and Rusev healing on a kid in the front row were also highlights. The title win for Jade was more dominant than I thought, but goes a long way in establishing her. Thought it was a fine show overall. The announcement of a tournament to determine Cena's opponent caught my attention the most, and with the inclusion of NXT and possibly TNA and AAA names, it could potentially lead to big stuff for those specific people, even if they don't win the tournament. For example, somebody like Obafemi being included en route to a call-up, or Joe Hendry being included en route to officially joining WWE, unless it was already a talking point in the show, what names beyond Raw and SmackDown could you see being included in it? Yeah, we did kind of talk about it. I also don't see, though, like an Obafemi being a part of it, because he'll have to lose. And I don't think
he should be safe for something bigger when they're ready to bring him up. I don't mind the idea of some, like, obviously they've said NXT people, but I wouldn't be.
What is an NXT name that you think would make sense?
I think you want to have somebody that is at least
maybe like a Miles Bourne or something, like somebody who could take a loss and, you know, like they see a definite future in.
Yeah, like you could put a Javon Evans in. Like someone that is sort of not really has an attachment to Cena, but someone that represents that's getting the big shot to be in a big match that they kind of laid out in the video. Tyler Crane writes in, hey, what's up, John and Way? I was in attendance for both nights in Salt Lake City. I had a pretty good time. The main highlight of SmackDown was definitely Ilya against Nathan Frazier, which was another fantastic match from Dragunov. As far as Saturday night's main event goes, I thought it was a pretty good show, at least from the live perspective. The live crowd seemed super into everything. I really enjoyed Cody and Drew, and I thought Punk and Jay was pretty good. To probably the most I've been entertained by a singles Jey Uso match. All in all, a great time. The only downside was the tickets I bought went down to $65 an hour after I had bought them for $108. Guess I should have been more patient. Tyler, it's a tough game to outwit, but we're glad you had a good time. And yes, the Ilya Frazier, that was the best match in Salt Lake City over that 24-hour period. I agree.
Final word of the weekend goes to Jesse from the Six, who says, "Dear John and Wei, my commiserations. You two are self-admitted bandwagon fans, but I know the losses of Friday and Saturday must have been agonizing for you. I didn't enjoy them either. I'm only a casual baseball fan, but I was hoping for a Jays win. I mean, what kind of man would I be to actively root against my own city's team? What kind of monster would do such a thing? It did feel like the Jays would lose, to be honest. There were just so many what-if moments that don't happen to winning teams, like that alleged lodged ball. But I have no wish to rehash painful memories. Like, let's say you tune into your favorite wrestling podcast to forget the torment of your team failing, only to hear the host smugly riff on your pain. Can you imagine? Anyway, I've enjoyed hearing you talk baseball and would love if this reinvigorated John's career as a baseball mogul. But really, there's only one thing to say. Leafs won on Saturday. Take care."
Listen, the Leafs are an amazing November team. April, not so much. But when I'll make this deal with Jesse. When the Leafs make it to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, I won't say a word, okay?
Will you buy a Leafs hat?
No, I won't. I won't even watch it. But when they make it to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, not a peep out of me, okay? They just have to do that. They just have to make it to Game 7.
You will not watch it. Come on. I don't buy that for a second.
I'm gonna go back and rewatch the first 10 minutes of CM Punk and Jey Uso, and I'm gonna try out that neckbreaker spot on myself to see if I can execute it better. That's what I'll do instead while Toronto is watching. But this is not going to be reality that has to comport with my actions at all, because it's just not a viable outcome. But there you have it. Thank you, everyone, for your feedback, your thoughts, and multiple commiserations that were sent to us. We appreciate those as well. Not always that we are able to receive from you. How are you?
Good. Thank you. I appreciate this chance to commiserate and to to just close the door on this whole thing.
All right. Well, Wei and I are going to go to opening day next year.
If you could get tickets, I think it's gonna be tough, man.
This team is not going to lose its fan base. In fact, it's going to be in more demand than ever. I think next year that's going to be like, they're not going to dismantle this team either. Like, they could lose Bo Bichette, and I'm not too frightened about that loss in the grand scheme of things. So
they will get a standing ovation whenever they take the field, whenever like they're seen as a group again.
Yeah. Yes, the Toronto Blue Jays. The home of your 2025 World Series finalists. They should put a banner up just for that.
Well, they'll put up the ALCS.
Yeah, we'll get the ALCS banner.
Yeah.
So that's something.
It's fine.
Second place. Second place. As Yamamoto is just in our nightmares.
Yeah.
That man.
Yeah.
Whatever he's making, it's not enough. That's the guy I want. That's who we need to go after. The contortionist.
Well, switch your cable provider. You got to support this struggling company. Rogers,
I'll get on the phone with them when they call me next. I'll get that. I'll put my bargaining to the test. Uh-huh. All right, everyone, we're gonna say goodnight. We're back on Monday with Rewind to Raw. So tune in on Monday evening, postwrestlingcafe.com, where we go live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night. Our schedule is back to normal this week, so we appreciate everyone's patience over the last week. Baseball's done. We're back to the grind of our regular schedule. So Collision Course is up now on the Cafe. Monday morning, you'll get Bruce and Karen's review of the Tanahashi final homecoming event. And then Rewind to Raw is coming your way this coming Monday evening. And we have Rewind Away later in the week, where we're going through some of the best retirement matches of all time. We have put together a compilation of retirement matches featuring the likes of Tam Nakano, Sting, Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair, Terry Funk. They will all be reviewed, and we have just released our whole schedule for the month of November. Cafe members are going to get, look at this, not just the greatest retirement matches of all time, but also reviews of UFC 322, TNA Turning Point, The Tanahashi Show, Collision Course every Saturday night. And then myself, Brandon from New Jersey, we're getting together. We have watched all of season 4 of Beverly Hills 90210. Did we do this for pleasure? No. Our pain is your pleasure. And we are going to sit down. We're going to go back to the 1993-94 season, where the gang goes to California University, where David acquires a meth addiction. Andrea Zuckerman gets pregnant. Steve Sanders joins the Alpha House amidst many controversies.
You know, through this whole like Jay's run, I've really appreciated like this glimpse into like what your 1993 like John Pollock would have been like. And to know that you were following the Jays as closely as you were for that season, while also following Beverly Hills 90210 as closely as you were.
If picture in picture existed, I'd be the only person that would have Jenny Garth on one screen and Devon White on the other.
Right. And somewhere, I'm sure, like, you know, season one WWE Raw or something. But like, you were a very interesting 9-year-old, I'm sure.
There's that word. Interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know how else to describe interesting. It. Interesting. I'm looking forward to that very much. I didn't know. Well, I guess I knew that Brandon is also, I mean, interesting is about the best way you could describe that person, Brandon from New Jersey. So looking forward to that. And I didn't have room for it because we have so much on this menu for November. But of course, we've got Post Pro Res coming out later this week. And our second edition of Rewind Away will have us looking at Transformers, the movie, and not the shitty Michael Bay one. Okay. The cartoon. The 1980s cartoon Transformers. That is the request of one of our patrons, so we will be covering that on an upcoming edition of Rewind.
I didn't know what the hell this was until I had to look it up for the description, and I realized that Orson Welles is one of the voices in this thing. I have not seen this. I don't know anything about Transformers, so this is sadly going to be... I don't either.
We might need an expert to join us for this panel.
This will be an awful review. I can't wait for it. So that's coming up later this month. Join the cafe now. You get in on all of the fun for the month of November. So with that, we bid everyone a farewell, and now you can pump up the emo version of the Coca-Cola jingle for the 2025 Toronto Blue Jays. Goodbye.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.